Not on. Okay, call to order the informational meetings for the House Business and Labor on May 20th. May 28th. Okay, thank you all very much for being here so early in the morning, and hopefully you had a nice productive time off, and congratulations to Representative Commissioner-elect Freeman for his Douglas County.
Hey,
yes. Okay, we have informational meetings this morning, a lot of it out of Boley and some of the things that they've been doing. And the first person I would like to introduce is Commissioner Brad Avakian, Commissioner of Bureau of Labor and Industries, who's going to talk a little bit about sexual harassment in the workplace. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. Good morning, committee members. I'm Brad Avakian, Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries, and you were kind enough to invite me here this morning to talk about sexual harassment complaints and how we process those at the Bureau of Labor and Industries, and I'm happy to do so. You also have coming after me Paloma Sparks, our legislative director, and one of our experts from the Civil Rights Division, because you were interested in Oregon family leave as well, and they'll be taking that on when I'm done. You have a packet that looks like this. We're not going to do a PowerPoint presentation. I'm also not going to follow this page by page, but it's just some good statistical and procedural information for you on how the complaint process works at the Bureau of Labor and Industries. The Bureau, you know, is charged with enforcing the state's wage and hour and civil rights laws. Those are two different divisions. Good morning, Representative. The Civil Rights Division enforces laws relative to employment settings, housing. We do all the state and federal housing discrimination claims and any discrimination that might occur in a public place. We get about 35,000 calls a year in that division from Oregonians that simply have questions about their rights in those areas. That boils down to an average of about 2,000 investigations a year. About 25% of those on average are sex discrimination or sexual harassment complaints. And the way it works is this. If an individual believes that they have been sexually harassed on the job, then they contact the Bureau, they fill out a questionnaire, which is what starts the complaint process. That questionnaire gets processed into a formal complaint that is signed by the individual, and they are then interviewed by somebody at the agency. And if there is sufficient evidence to proceed, then the complaint gets assigned to an investigator, and an investigation is done. Those oftentimes take 3 to 6 months to complete. Statutorily, the agency has got a year to complete an investigation. And investigations, of course, involve all the typical things you would think of: interviewing witnesses, collecting documents, collecting payroll records, further discussions with the individual. The investigator is not an advocate for the individual. The investigator is a truth seeker, trying to figure out exactly what it is that happened in this particular case. If after the investigation the agency finds substantial evidence that the law was violated, then the case can move into a settlement proceeding where we try and mutually resolve the situation. Or if the case can't settle, or if for some reason the agency believes the case shouldn't settle, it moves to the Bureau's Administrative Prosecution Unit, where formal charges are filed and the case moves to prosecution in an administrative hearing. The other way that a complaint can happen is what's called a commissioner's complaint. The labor commissioner in Oregon is charged with the authority if he or she sees an injustice occurring, has a reasonable basis for believing that the law is being violated, then the commissioner can file a complaint on behalf of the people of Oregon, and then the case proceeds as it I just described in the normal process. The individual who filed the complaint also has the ability, if they choose to withdraw their complaint and take their case to circuit court in Oregon at any time up to the point that we file formal charges in the prosecution unit and start moving towards a hearing. The other thing I wanted to mention about that process specifically with regard to sexual harassment complaints is that those complaints, like I said, 25% are sex discrimination or sexual harassment complaints. It averages about 150 cases a year in specifically to sexual harassment. Those types of complaints are processed just as any other type of discrimination complaint or harassment complaint would be processed. In recent years, we've made some changes to the way that we triage and investigate complaints that I wanted to make note of for you, too. We, on the average, about 80% to 90% of cases that are filed with us end up being dismissed for any number of reasons. They lacked the right jurisdiction, meaning the people came to the wrong agency. There wasn't enough evidence to proceed. The claim was meritless. It could be any number of reasons, but 80 to 90% of them end up being dismissed. A few years back, we wanted to change our triaging system so that when a case came to the agency, we could figure out as early on as possible whether this was one of those cases that had a high amount of credible evidence that was likely to proceed to some positive result for somebody, or if it was one of those cases that was meritless and was going to fall into the 80 to 90% and be dismissed. And so we set up a new triaging system we call the ABC system, where as soon as a case hits the agency, it is the person is interviewed, their evidence is collected, and an assessment is done in order to decide whether it's an A case, which has significant merit, it's going to move forward, a C case, which is a meritless case, which we all know from the get-go is not going to end up in a positive result for anybody, or a B case, which is somewhere in the middle. The policy of the agency is that all C cases and many of the lower half of the B cases are immediately dismissed from the agency. We don't ask the employer or the landlord even for a response to the complaint. And we do this for a couple of different reasons. One of them is that if it is a case that is not going to proceed, the individual filing the complaint should be able to know that immediately. And if they choose to then move the case to circuit court, they can do that. But the other is that an employer who's facing a meritless claim, we just don't believe should be spending 3 months, 6 months, or a year paying attorney's fees and going through a process that we all know from the get-go is not going to end up in a positive result for anybody. We estimate we're saving Oregon employers $4 to $5 million a year in legal fees through this new process. And it allows us to devote our resources to those cases in which we know somebody was harmed, we know that there were damages, we can process them faster with better results for people that have been discriminated against in Oregon. So it has proven to be very beneficial both to people filing complaints and to employers both.
Okay, excuse me, Commissioner. Mm-hmm. Representative Kenworth has a question.
Yeah, I just had a question in this regard. Thank you, Madam Chair. In any instance where a case is filed, is the employer automatically notified of the filing?
When a case is designated as a C or a low B case, the employer will get a letter saying that the complaint had been filed against them, but that it was dismissed and no further action is required on their part. Mm-hmm. If it's a case that's going to proceed through an investigation, then the employer gets a different kind of a letter explaining to them what their rights are, what the procedures are, and a request for any type of documentation or other evidence that the agency is going to be collecting.
And a follow-up question. Mm-hmm. And what's the typical timeline between the filing of the complaint and a decision? about whether it's an A, B, or C?
Madam Chair, Representative, the initial decision is very, very quick. It could be within days. We want to make sure that we interview the individual filing the complaint, gather whatever evidence they had so that we can do a thorough assessment. That can happen very quickly. If for some reason the individual, for instance, had an attorney file the complaint with us, mailed in the complaint, and there's time between scheduling them in for the interview, then sometimes it can take a little bit longer than that. But it is a fairly quick turnaround from the moment they contact the agency to the initial assessment of whether it's an A, B, or C case.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much.
And the one other change within the agency that I wanted to share with you, and then when I'm done with that, I think I will be done with my remarks, and we'll see if the committee has any questions. Is that 5 years ago and before that, the prosecutors at the agency and the administrative law judges that we had did a very competent job. They were very experienced in our area of the law, but there was no requirement that those positions have law degrees. I believe that we could process cases faster, more efficiently, and better with judges that were sitting that were not just experienced but that also had legal backgrounds, and the same for the prosecutors. And so in recent years we have changed those job descriptions to require law degrees. We created the position of chief prosecutor in order to head our prosecution unit, and what that has resulted in is faster time frames in getting cases to hearing, more efficient processing of cases, and frankly, I think relationships between defense counsel and the agency that just allow us to do a motion practice and to get through hearings in a much much faster and way that just achieves better results. It allows us to identify when the case gets to that point, whether or not the legal merits of the case really are continuing to be good and strong and warrant further processing of the case through the prosecution. And if not, it allows us to get cases settled and out of that system faster. And at the same time, in cases where we have egregious violations where people have been harmed, it allows us to do a very good, thorough prosecution of the case. And that's important for a couple reasons. One is we need to protect people that have been harmed. At the same time, if you have businesses out there that are skirting the rules, creating unfair advantage against other businesses that do go the extra mile for their workers and play by the rules, we need to have a prosecution unit that is capable of holding those businesses that don't play by the rules accountable and create a level playing field in Oregon for businesses that do. With that, Madam Chair, I think I will finish and see if the committee has any questions.
Okay, thank you. Do you have any questions? Representative Fagan.
Just a comment. I always look forward to legislative days as a way to get away from my law practice for a few days, so I just want to thank the commissioner for not letting me do that this morning, because that's what I do in my legal practice, is represent employers in employment cases. So thank you for making me feel like I'm sitting right back in my law office.
These aren't CLE hours, are they?
Yes, exactly. Can I get, like, yeah, can I get 30 minutes of CLE credit for that right there?
Did he say it as it is?
Yes, very accurately.
Very good. Okay, any other questions? Okay, thank you very much, and thank you for the work that you do. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, we'll go back on the agenda, and so we've got two things that we're talking about. Are we going to do this one now? And when we, just as a little bit of a background, a few months ago, last session, thanks to Representative Fagan, we had a work group on OFLIN-FEMLA, Oregon Family Medical Leave Act, and Federal Medical Leave Act. And there was a real concern on the part of business, and justly so, about especially the reporting of a leave under FEMLA and a leave under OFLIN, which covered which under FEMLA, and so there was a lot of concerns about that. So we met and talked about some of the issues, and a lot of the issues dealt with reporting of OFLIN-FEMLA. And so what we were what BOLI was doing and is continuing to do is to hopefully have website resources for employers and employees dealing with the concerns about OFLIN-FEMLA. So with that, we have a panel to talk about their website resources for workers and employers regarding the family leave law. So do all of you want to come up? It's got Pluma Sparks, and is it Chris or Eric?
Eric.
And Eric Yates. So thank you very much. And if you could make sure you identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Paloma Sparks, representing the Bureau of Labor and Industries. Mm-hmm. And I will just sort of quickly go over some of our resources that we have available on our website for both employers and employees. For employers, we have a number of resources. We provide publications that employers can buy that explains how OFLIN-FEMLA work. We also provide seminars that employers can attend and send their managers to learn how OFLIN-FEMLA work and how to track leave time. And in the materials that you should have, all of those are hyperlinked, so you can look at those websites and explore them at your leisure. We also have the technical assistance website, which has FAQs, some fact sheets, contact information for how employers can call BOLI technical assistance and ask questions about, you know, whether or not a certain situation applies. And then for employees, our resources are sort of similar. A lot of the fact sheets that technical assistance makes, you know, apply across the board, so the same information is available also for employees. But we also have, we've made a little bit of a change to our civil rights website, which is where most employees will go to ask questions. Right there in the front of the Civil Rights website, we now have a link to the FAQs about family leave. And then we have OFLA and FEMLA overview. People can also call into Civil Rights Division. We answer questions all the time. We get about 20,000 calls a year. And mostly we can answer questions about OFLA. Our staff's not really experts on FEMLA, at least within regards to the Civil Rights Division. Again, we've got some more fact sheets available. And I know there's been a lot of talk within the work group about having, so technical assistance is available, but it's only for employers, and it's funded by employers who pay for the services the technical assistance provides. Civil Rights is not funded that way. So there has been some discussion about maybe having a question line. We are in discussions. We're not sure what that might do for workload, but we're certainly exploring the option right now. So that's about where we're at.
Thank you. Do we want to wait until Mr. Yates is finished before we have questions? Or?
Mr. Yates is mostly here if you have questions about how this works.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the quick overview. You made a comment about you guys really know the Oregon portion, but not the federal. Do you know the differences in the two?
They do, yes. So we have we also have a number of informational items available internally and externally, and we also have tracking documents, so allowing knowing which kinds of leave is allowed for how long. But you know, sometimes if you dig really deep into a FEMLA issue, Civil Rights Division may not know the answer. But they know the differences.
So just a quick comment to you all that are coming back and going to do some more work on this. From an employer standpoint, how wonderful would it be if there was just one and they were the same? Even the folks that do this admit that the difference is confusing. Imagine as an employer trying to wade through all that. Just a comment.
Representative Fagan was in the committee, and so
right,
we didn't
just kind of to put things
that
in perspective. The Federal Family Medical Leave Act only applies to employers with 50 employees or more, and in Oregon, family leave is 25 or more. So the amount of employers in Oregon that FEMLA applies to is remarkably small, because it's, you know, only larger employers. The vast majority of employers in Oregon are small businesses, which means they wouldn't, you know, even OFLA wouldn't apply to them, or only OFLA will. So the fact that our state-funded agency only knows about the Oregon family leave is, you know, that's serving, you know, I mean, I can't remember the numbers off the top of my head, but it was something like 96% of businesses in Oregon would either have no application or just OFLA. So it's, you know, it's the larger employers are the ones that would have to comply with FEMLA. That, you know, they tend to have HR departments, et cetera, but the smaller businesses that benefit from technical assistance, and they only apply to OFLA.
Okay. Anything else? Representative Thatcher?
Sorry.
Because I want to be following up.
Okay, you're talking, Representative Fagan brought up the the headcount, I suppose, of employees that a business has, and how that threshold is met. And as an employer, I get confused how to count an employee. That sounds really silly, but how do you count an employee? Is it a FTE? Is it, you know, at what level? And then with, you know, the Affordable Care Act coming out, then suddenly full-time is 30, and so now that is, I don't know. It's just very confusing. Is there one standard somewhere on how to count an employee?
Good question.
Good morning. My name is Eric Yates. I'm the field operation manager. Chair Doherty, Representative Thatcher.
Yeah, if you want to pull the microphone,
okay.
Just not that close, but just closer to you. Yeah.
Thank you. The eligibility requirements for an employee, I believe it's 6 months. An employee must work for the employer, and then they have to have a health condition that is a serious health condition, and their eligibility requirements for that, what meets that definition. There's also a minimum number of hours that the individual must work in that leave period, which is 25. And I do believe all those that information is on the updates we've made on the website. And if you go to the website, it will describe who is eligible, and also the posters that employers are required to put up should also have that information on it.
In fact, this kind of reminds me of, so as a question, what is considered, if with OFLA and FEMLA, and Representative Fagan may know this, is an employee considered a body, or 30 hours a week or 40 hours, for the difference between being an OFLA or a FEMLA employee or employer? Is there a definition for what an employee is when it comes to figuring out which laws you're under?
To be eligible, I can't speak off the top of my head what the eligibility requirements for FEMLA are. I believe it is a longer time period. For OFLA, it is the employee needs to work for that employer for 6 months before they are eligible for OFLA, while another employee may be eligible. So
I was just wondering whether the 25 and 50, what was considered an employee? So maybe that's something that's never been brought up. So we'll just keep it quiet. No, maybe Jennifer knows. Thank you.
Okay.
Welcome.
Good
identify
morning,
yourself.
Everyone. For the record, my name is Jennifer Germanson. I'm the manager of the Technical Assistance for Employers program with the Bureau of Labor and Industries. I apologize for being late. I had to do my duty as a good citizen and stop and give information about a wreck I saw.
Oh, only 22?
So I can't answer the question. To be eligible for the Federal Family and Medical Leave Act, the employee must have been employed with the covered employer for 12 months, not necessarily consecutive, and worked an average of at least 1,250 hours during the 12-month period immediately preceding a leave. For the Oregon Family Leave Act, the employee must have been employed for the covered employer 180 calendar days and worked an average of at least 25 hours a week during that 180-day period.
That
so there is a bit of a difference for eligibility.
Okay, so that answers my question.
Okay.
It
really is complicated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. Very complicated.
I promise I'm using my last chance to speak card today. But first of all, it is complicated, but I think the point is, Jennifer Germanson, the director of technical assistance, knows the answer, so an employer can call for free and get the answer to their question. But mostly I just wanted to put in a plug. I'm a big fan of technical assistance under Boley, both in terms of my own practice, because I am on the, I probably, they're kind of always my last resource when I'm doing a research question. I just want to check and make sure. They're incredibly responsive. I think they say they'll get back to you within 24 hours, and I find it's almost always sooner than that. So that's in my legal practice, but I also just want to, again, give them props. We've been doing a series for employers in my district. We sent out, I think, something like, I think we targeted about 5,000 different, using the Secretary of State's database of who has a principal place of business in our district. And we've now done 4 of what will be 5 monthly series. Boley comes every month. They set up, we're teaming with the Small Business Development Center at Clackamas Community College. Jennifer comes, brings her truck of, you know, booklets and stuff, and they just, she just gives a presentation for an hour for free to any local employers that want to come, and we target it, you know, on wage and hour issues. Yesterday was on disability issues and stuff, so they just do a great job, and just as a legislator, she's been an incredible resource, and that whole department has, so.
Representative Kinnaman.
Yeah, we've had some discussions in this committee about some of the differences between the state and the federal program. Do you anticipate, as an agency, bringing some recommendations for changes? Well, it happens every so often. I just wonder.
Chair Doherty, Representative Kenemer, we are not anticipating bringing any legislative concepts. Be happy to talk to people about it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay, and one other question. First of all, Jennifer was a great resource when we had our committee meeting. But one thing is kind of a follow-up. I know that, that many of the businesses were saying there's kind of like a rubric that was colored as to what's covered under FEMLA, what's covered under OFLA, and, you know, when something was red and something was yellow and then it was purple. Has that been updated or improved? Because I know that that was one thing that, that, in fact, maybe if you want to just give a little update as to some of the improvements or updates or things that you've done on the employer end of it. Because the employee end of it is fine, although we brought up some things during the committee of maybe sometimes, to say, civil rights might intimidate some people. So I know that you guys were going to work on that. But from the employer end of it, if you could update us on some of the improvements.
Chair Doherty, thank you for the question. We actually brought copies of our color-coded tracking sheet that's in an Excel format. We actually thought we had it posted on our website several months ago, and we discovered as we were looking at it that something happened. We had some technical errors, and we do anticipate having the correct form posted on our website under our frequently asked questions and fact sheet, so that will be available. A couple of other things that we've done is we now have a combined OFLA-FEMLA form for employers to use for the medical certification. Employers had a lot of questions about where is the OFLA form, and OFLA doesn't have a required medical verification form, but due to the employer questions and the OFLA-FEMLA work group that I was on, we did develop an OFLA-FEMLA combined form for employers to use. That is available on our website. We've also updated our employment laws handbook for 2014 and included all of the updates under both federal leave as well as Oregon family leave, and then some different types of leave that we've included, such as the Portland Sick Leave Ordinance. We've got information about that in there, and the new OFLA bereavement leave. There's an expanded section on that. And of course, we've updated all of our seminar materials, so when employers do come to one of our technical assistance seminars, they get all that updated information.
Okay, great. Thank you. Because I know that it is, as an employer, it is very confusing when you are one that is under both of the laws.
Yes.
So anyway, any other questions? Okay. Anything else to add? Okay. Well, thank you very much. And Jennifer, thank you, and Pullman and Eric for your work. We appreciate it. And hopefully there'll be continuing conversations with employers as to what some of the issues are, and I know you guys are pretty receptive to them.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. The last thing we have, oh, we might be at here by nine, are programs for the unemployed and dislocated workers interested in starting a business. And this was brought to our attention, and so I thought for the committee might want to know some of the information that's going on. So we have Deanna Hassanpour and Mark Gregory. And anyone else that you'd like to bring up?
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Just make sure we identify ourselves for the record.
Yes, ma'am. I'm Deanna Hassanpour. I'm the Deputy Administrator for the Unemployment Insurance Benefits Program.
And I'm Mark Gregory, the Deputy State Director for the Oregon Small Business Development Center Network.
Thank you.
And thank you for inviting us to speak about this program. Within the framework of the unemployment insurance program, there is a program specifically for people who wish to start their own business. It's called the Self-Employment Assistance Program. What the program is it's a reemployment option that allows some claimants to start or expand a business while receiving unemployment insurance benefits. And claimants who are having trouble getting reemployed can instead create their own job. We do use what's called a worker profiling scoring system that was developed in conjunction with SBDC to target people who are likely to exhaust their employment benefits prior to getting reemployed. And part of the worker profiling, it's a very complicated score, and one day I sat down and read the entire manual on how it is calculated, but it does sort of target people. It looks at labor market, it looks at their age, their employment history, and seeing someone's in a labor market where their job is basically left, they would be more likely to exhaust than someone else in a different area with more reemployment opportunities. And I skipped ahead. The program also allows people who qualify for the unemployment for the SEA portion of unemployment insurance. They are not required to do the same types of job-seeking activities that regular unemployment insurance claimants do. This allows them to focus full-time on starting or developing their self-employment assistance endeavor. And another difference from our regular unemployment insurance program is that income from self-employment, their self-employment assistance endeavor does not impact their insurance eligibility or amount. So if they're getting income from it, it doesn't lower their weekly benefit amount as it would if someone was on regular unemployment insurance. What are the rules? Some of them seem pretty easy, and usually they're not barriers to people participating in the program. The business must be legal to operate in Oregon. We do have some commuter claimants, so that does occasionally come up as an issue, but quite rarely. The claimant must be able to legally operate the business, so that means they have to have all of the licensure required for the business endeavor they've either already started or wish to start. They must work at least 40 hours each week on the business or attend entrepreneurial training. So activities that they do in conjunction with SBDC or OMIN would count towards their 40 hours of business activities for their business. And then within 30 days of acceptance into the program, participants must submit a formal business plan and register the business with the Oregon Secretary of State and the IRS. And again, this is an opportunity where we'll be leveraging our relationship with OMIN and SBDC because the people who work for me are very technically skilled at the unemployment insurance program. They're not particularly skilled because that's not a part of what they do in telling people whether that's a really great, it's a feasible business plan or not. They do use a tool that was developed, again, in conjunction with SBDC to help them. And it has been helpful and quite successful within the toolkit of things we have.
Can I ask you, is this a statewide program or is it just...
It's a statewide program. Okay. Yes, ma'am. Is the program successful? We think so, and we kind of compared it against some information that we got from Entrepreneur Weekly against likely startup failure or success. Our statistics show that 70% of participants are able to launch a business after participating in SEA. And that's against, again, the Entrepreneur Weekly showed that about 36% of startups failed after 2 years. And at the 7-year mark, it was up to 63%. 77% of our participants who started businesses between 2004 and 2009 were still in business as of February 2011. Mm-hmm. And the majority of participants are sole proprietors with no employees, but up to a third of them do have employees. So from my perspective, it's really important that this is also not just giving them a job, but they're becoming job creators, which I think is really important as we continue to recover from the Great Recession. Mm-hmm.
FDA quite an funding. Impressive rate of businesses that are still in business 2 years later.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah. And just a plug for our website, we do have a number of success stories on our Oregon Employment Department website under the FDA program of people who have voluntarily decided to let us do videos of their business successes, and it's actually quite inspiring.
That's great.
When I'm having a day when I, you know, wonder why did I come to work, I go and look at those because it's really neat to see that the program is really doing great things. The program is funded out of the annual unemployment and Wagner-Paser grants. There is a requirement in the law that it doesn't cost the unemployment insurance trust fund any more than regular unemployment insurance would. So what this means is it runs the same number of weeks for eligibility as the regular unemployment insurance program. There's a cap on the number of participants within the larger UI population, and that's that FDA claimants cannot exceed 5% of the total UI population. And we're currently a little above 1%. I think we're 1.2 or 1.3%. We currently have about 556 people participating in the program, and I think when I checked yesterday, with about 40,000 and change people claiming every week currently for unemployment insurance benefits. In first quarter 2014, we paid out $1.5 million in UI benefits to FDA claimants. And then the reason I'm here co-presenting with SBDC is because in late 2013, the Oregon Employment Department applied for a self-employment assistance grant through the Department of Labor. Our grant application was approved. An amount of $332,576. The grant was primarily to work with Small Business Development Center staff as well as OMIN counselors who will have between, it depends on what the claimant actually needs is decided by SBDC because they're the experts in the area. But up to three sessions with each SEA participant to provide technical guidance. And again, we'll leave it up to the network and SBDC to decide what type of guidance each particular claimant needs because that's their expertise and not ours. So if someone needs financial planning or market research planning, they need help, again, with a better business plan in terms of its feasibility. They'll deploy the particular service for that, and this grant will pay for those services. Mm-hmm. The remainder of the grant is what's called program promotion within the grant itself, and that is to make claimants more aware of the program and making entrepreneurial resources available over the internet. So for us, that's having a bigger presence on the internet. We're working with some of the former SEA participants who are really supporters of the program and helping us target where we would sort of put our promotional opportunities on Facebook, for example. They have some message boards that they are quite active in and are and helping us with that. So we're leveraging our internal media source to do that. And some of the videos that we've just put out, we've been able to do through that grant. And then one last thing that I was asked to speak about was, again, because Oregon has such a robust self-employment assistance program in the nation, Department of Labor asked us to partner with one of its subcontractors, Mathematica, for what's called the Self-Employment Training Demonstration Project. This is the project that is only in certain cities within the country. So it is just in the Portland metro area here in Oregon. It's also in Cleveland, Los Angeles, and Chicago. They are leveraging what we are not able to do because once people leave the self-employment assistance program, we don't have any way to force them to track data back to us. So 10 years from now, we won't be able to see, you know, what kind of payroll they're putting forth. They're under no obligation to report those back to us. If they participate in the SET program as a part of the they're given micro grants, seed money to start their business, they're required to sign an agreement with the Department of Labor and Mathematica to, I think, between 5 and 7 years, do some long-range data studies, which for us will be exciting because then you'll be able to see they started their business, did they survive, and what kind of payroll did they add 5 or 10 years from now. Both FCA claimants and non-claimants are allowed to participate in SET. They've got two different groups to kind of study what types of services they're deploying and how the microgrants help, whether you're an FCA claimant or not. And we did check with Mathematica, I think, a month or so ago to see where we were in terms of participation level, which is their sort of success indicator right now. And Portland has the highest level of engagement out of the four cities, which I think is really impressive. Mm-hmm. We do help them promote the program. We promote it when people come into WorkSource Oregon offices, when people are engaged in the reemployment activities, whether it's in WorkSource Oregon or a new pilot project we're doing in the call centers. We also give them information if they're in the Portland metro area to participate in the SET program. And with that, I'd like to turn it, if there are no questions for me, over to Mr. Gregory so he can talk about all of the awesome services that SBDC will be able to offer our SBA claimants.
Hey, do you have any questions? Representative Witt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you explain the rationale behind the 5% ceiling on claimants who would be entitled to start their own businesses?
That's a great question, and I do not know the answer. I think that even when I look at the 5%, we're nowhere near the ceiling. I think even at the high, we were probably at 1.5%. And we do a lot of outreach because, as I was talking with Mr. Gregory last week, you're not going to start a business in 26 weeks. And that's, you know, the length of unemployment insurance benefits, including someone on FEA. So we try to target them right from the start. As soon as they apply, we do a worker profiling score on every claimant. And if they hit the target number that we've set, and we actually lowered it since I came on board because I felt we weren't targeting a large enough population. And even with increasing the number of people who get the worker profiling score letter, we still have 1.2 to 1.5% rate. But if we ever got anywhere near the ceiling, I mean, I think that would create a conversation about should we raise the 5%.
Madam Chair, thank you. You anticipated my second question, which was, had we bumped up against that ceiling in the height of the recession? So it appears that it's not a problem. But could that ceiling ever become a problem with the federal government and the administration of unemployment funds and a program not being offered equally across the board to anyone who applied?
I actually don't think so. I think that they give the states quite a bit of... First of all, you don't have to run an SBA program. There are a lot of states do not. There are just a handful of states that actually run the SBA program. I'm not sure why. I was on a panel for the UI Directors Conference last year, and I was surprised at the lack of engagement with states for this program. It's a little bit more difficult and complex to run than regular unemployment insurance, but it's not certainly not insurmountable. I mean, that's just in terms of matching up the workload to FT and then requesting funding to match that. So we're given quite a bit of leeway in that. And the worker profiling score system, the feds actually allow the states to develop their own scoring system. So there's not a cookie-cutter scoring system that every state who participates in the program has to use.
Okay. Other questions? Okay. And I always make a comment when the employment division is here is just appreciative, especially WorkSource Oregon, of getting people who have been out of, especially stay-at-home moms, who have been out of the workforce for a long time, and what they do to get them back into the workforce and jobs. And this happened to my next-door neighbor, and now gainfully employed, loves her job, went from temp to permanent, and so on and so forth. And she actually credits the WorkSource Oregon for updating her resume, updating her skills, and doing these kind of things. So I appreciate very much what you do.
Thank you for sharing that, Madam Chair. Good to hear. Thank you.
Mr. Gregory.
Sure. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I want to give you a brief orientation to the Oregon Small Business Development Center Network and related to how it works in close coordination with the Self-Employment Assistance Program. I'll just click point through.
I can just click for you.
Yeah. So about the Oregon Small Business Development Center, it is a unique and well-established partnership with 17 community colleges, two of our state universities, the U.S. Small Business Administration, and Business Oregon. What we offer. For 31 years, the Oregon Small Business Development Center Network has provided one-to-one advice to over 156,000 current and prospective business owners, and over 575,000 individuals have attended training with our network. The topics include, as we referenced earlier, business planning, accounting and financial management, marketing, human resources, government contracting, international trade, customer service, and a wide variety of specialized assistance. Our people and our advisors, the Oregon Small Development Center Network employs 110 business advisors across our 19 small business development centers throughout the state, all of whom have current business experience. Most advisors also have their MBAs or completion of other like academic credentials. In terms of the client mix that we serve, owners of established businesses comprise about 60% of our clients, whereas 40% are pre-venture or have interest in self-employment. As we look specific to the Self-Employment Assistance Program, the OS BDCN has assisted SEA clients since the program's inception. In 2009, we did see a sharp increase in SEA referrals. It was approximately 300 clients per month. It was really inundating our staff quite a bit, and so the OS BDCN worked with the Self-Employment Assistance Program to implement this assessment and scoring tool. We found that the tool actually yields as much as a 90% success rate with clients, and we validate with our clients that their business starts and capital and jobs created, that we played a significant role in that in a third-party validation. So basically, our work with the SEA program enables the OSBDC to dedicate staff additional resources, includes things like market research for feasibility analysis and review of the business plan. We also get into a number of specialized areas depending on the client's needs as we assess them. And we believe the SEA improvement project will help us manage the services, specialized services to clients in a similar way. We have other agencies like the Oregon Department of Transportation, where we've assisted their Office of Civil Rights and work with contractors. We also have agreements with the Public Utilities Commission, where we've assisted in technology improvement with a small business to integrate e-operations as well as e-commerce, as well as the Grow Oregon project, which actually helped us to first initiate our market research institute out of Southern Oregon University. And that will
also have enough knowledge to expand on what the Grow Oregon project is, because I've never heard of it.
Sure, that's this is a pilot program that's now in our core budget with the Oregon Business Development Department, and really what it focuses on in the pilot period. We focused on, we actually achieved about 39 businesses that we assisted that were traded sector businesses, $1 million greater in sales, and really assisted them with up to 20 hours of advising with specialized market research to really help them grow into new markets.
Thank you.
So we've had a number of similar supplemental efforts with other agencies and had a good relationship with the Self-Employment Assistance Program.
Okay, great. Any questions? Thank you very much. We do have one question. The services that you have for under this, is it does it, especially for entrepreneurs, and I'm thinking of just out in the area that I'm in, there were so many high-tech people that were displaced, I guess is a nice way to say it, that started own little businesses. For those entrepreneurs, is this service free, or do they have to charge, or?
It's free. So that's the And this was, we do send a lot of people to SBDC regardless of whether we have this grant funding opportunity or not. And SBDC, again, in 2009, because of the glut of people that we were sending their way, worked with us to come up with some other tools so they've got some level of service. But SBDC doesn't charge for those. If it recommends other types of training, like you need to go take a business class or basic accounting class at Lane Community College, then the claimant needs to pay for that as well as whatever books and things. But the actual sitting down with the financial advisor or a feasibility market study person SBDC was, they were getting those services for free. So this just allows SBDC to expand the services it provides to people other than just the SEA claimants.
Yeah. And just out of curiosity, you may not know the answer to this, but under, you know, both of your programs, what sort of entrepreneurial businesses or businesses were people starting? Was there, it was just, was it across the board or?
It's across the board. We have everyone from starting, we had two people who came out of the high-tech sector and then started Urban Airship. Mm-hmm. They were both participants in our program, and they now have offices, I think, in London, in Asia, here and in Los Angeles, in a lovely building in downtown Portland. Mm-hmm. And they have over $1 million in revenue a year. So that's one of the biggest success stories. But we also have people who just, I think, sort of took the time to take stock and look at, did they want to remain in their labor market? And they had to do sort of a 180 change about what they were doing. So we have people who've started home health care businesses. We have people who've started daycare. We have people who've started yoga studios. We have one person who started retrofitting buses into food carts, which is very popular here in Oregon. And we have someone who started a fly fishing tour guide company. So it really runs the gamut. But I think that's where we don't have the ability to really to point people in the right direction. They come up with sort of rough sketches. We send them to SBDC. Mm-hmm. They help them refine that and figure out whether that's going to be a good fit for the market within which they want to remain. But I'm very proud of the success stories that when I look at them, they're really that do, every once in a while you do the feel good about what you do. That's one of the feel good pieces of what we do.
Well, that's good. Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Okay, with that, we're done. Anybody want to share or report anything that was done off session or anything that deals with committee stuff? I guess we could have started at 9, but now you're all set and ready for the day. So, anyway. You look like you have a question, Representative Witt.
Well, not so much a question, Madam Chair, as a comment. And it didn't occur to me while the folks from Boley were present, but when this was handed out, I thought that perhaps a matrix on the state and federal law would be helpful. And I would presume that the state has developed one, and maybe Representative Fagan's aware of whether they have or not. But
they do have a matrix of of it, and actually we've had copies of it. Would you like the committee to have copies of the matrix?
That would be great.
Also, FEMLA, what crosses, and that kind of thing.
And I think the matrix that we had for the, also again, just put it in perspective, because it showed the numbers of actual numbers of businesses registered in Oregon that have to deal with both, and it's something like 4%. It's very, very low. The vast majority are only dealing with OFLA or not dealing with either.
Yeah. And they did go through and have where some of the crossovers are, and I will make sure that I'll give Jennifer a call and that's sent to the committee members.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? Okay, thank you. With that,